House Education together with the committee that always starts right on time, we're 6 minutes late, so. Would you call a roll, please?
Representative Seacole?
Here.
Representative Thurman?
Here.
Representative Price Tompkins?
Here.
Representative Reinbold?
She's online, but she's not part of the quorum, but I understand she's there listening. Go ahead.
Representative Vasquez? Representative Colbert? Chair Keller?
Here. Representative Vasquez was excused, and Representative Laura Reinbold was excused, and Representative Christ Thompson was excused, but the winds didn't cooperate with your travel plan, so here we are. Okay, we have two bills before us. The first one we're going to go right to is HCR 2, and the committee has heard the bill. It may be very brief. Exchange here, Drew's, the sponsors in the room. What the discussion was, if you remember, was just the date, the appropriate date for Alaska School Choice Week. At least that's the only question I'm aware of that was on the table that was left. And we have a CS in front of us that has that date. Would the sponsor like to come up and make a comment or assure us that this is Monday through Friday, or Sunday through Sunday, or whatever it is we want to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Lynn Gaddis, and I represent District 7, the Greater Wasilla Area. And I'll defer to my staff, Mr. Andrew Drew Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to go over the
changes. Identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Drew Ford. Just to go over the changes that were done to HCR 2. On page 1, line 1, they deleted 25th through 31st of 15 and inserted 24 through 30 of 2016. And then on page 2, lines 6 through 7, they deleted 25 through 31 of 15 and inserted 24 through 30 of 16. And that is a Sunday through Saturday.
Okay, great. Can we have a motion to adopt the CS? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move we adopt LS 0402/W as our working document.
Okay. Seeing no objection, that's the bill in front of us. Any questions from the committee to the sponsor, or the sponsor staff? Is there anybody we'll go ahead and open up public testimony. If there's any there, you can feel free to stand down or stay there, whatever you like. Is there anybody in the room that wants to testify on HCR 2? Anybody online that wants to testify on HCR 2? We're going to close public testimony before the committee. Is there discussion or Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had received a number of communications from people in my district wanting clarification, and I think we got the clarification last time in discussion that this was not committing any state funds to go through vouchers or anything else, and we had the agreement with the sponsor that that's not what this resolution says, that it recognizes that school choice is something that we've supported in the state of Alaska, and the parents should have the choice to send their children to the schools of their choice, as well as homeschool. We have been a state that is probably on the forefront of allowing homeschooling, and that the accountability for that schooling rests then on the parents. And so we are not saying that there shouldn't be accountability. We are just saying that the choice for that education mechanism is then transferred with homeschool to the parents themselves. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that clears up my statement that this is not in any way promulgating state resources to education other than public education. And so I'm very comfortable with this resolution at this form.
Okay, Representative Seaton, I just want to comment that that I I appreciate you clarifying that for the record. I also want to clarify that I'm very, very certain that anybody involved in education in the state of Alaska, any parents, would agree that every student, every child in the state of Alaska, it's in the public best interest of the state that every child gets a super education and has access to that, super education. And as far as the point on public funds, I think it's a fine-tuned one and one that is obviously a point of contention. But what's not of contention, and I'm sure you would agree with me, or pretty sure you would agree with me, is that we want every child in Alaska to have access to good education.
And Mr. Chairman, I fully agree with that, and I think that the demarcation point is making sure that the accountability for that good and sufficient education comes to the person that is actually stimulating or permitting or choosing that education system. And so accountability is key throughout our educational process. And so I think we're not in disagreement on that at all.
Okay. And Representative Seed, one more comment on that is that, well, why do I blank? It's a Friday morning. I'm ready to get. It's before the committee right now. I just want to say what I want to recall is what's on the record from the last hearing, and that is that accountability on the education process is ultimately with the parent. And what you're talking about, I believe, is accountability that we have when we sign the check that go out for various programs. And we understand there's a tension there, but that isn't the point of this bill. The point of the bill is that we want parents to have a choice and saying that it is the parents' responsibility, obvious, and interest, and we're agreeing with it, that they are accountable for their children's education.
And Mr. Chairman, I fully agree with that, and that's right. My position as well. And thank you.
Okay, I'm glad it's back on the record. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Anchorage School District has dozens and dozens of traditional public schools, charter schools, but we also have a multitude, as the bill says, of optional programs as well as alternative programs. All of our programs of choice celebrate their existence and encourage the public to come forward in a celebration of choice annually. And I'm wondering if we are not ignoring the optional and alternative programs by not including them, perhaps as an amendment after traditional public and before public charter schools.
Okay. If you have an amendment, feel free to bring it forward. Okay. Is there anybody else in the room that wants to comment? Representative Drummond, I think that it's on the fly, and I think if you introduce an amendment, what we're going to have is a time we're going to have to set this bill aside again, and to list all the choices that every district has is an impossible task. I'm from the Mats. I represent the Mat-Su Borough School District. We have excellent public school choices for our children in the Mat-Su. I guess one of the most interesting ones is the Mat-Su Central, which is we have fiber optics between our schools, and we provide courses online that homeschool parents can go in and participate and use with accountability. And if we get into trying to list everyone that the public school has done, I just don't see the purpose, because, like I say, most districts are well there. So you feel free to make an amendment, but I'm a little bit hesitant that it would achieve what you think it might. But Representative Drummond,
if I might, Mr. Chair, thank you. The Anchorage School District has had choice for seemingly forever, in my opinion, and I would like to move to amend by simply adding the word optional, comma, between public schools and public charter schools.
Well, would you, Representative Drummond, give us some page and line number?
Page 1, line 9, the word optional followed by a comma before the word public charter schools.
So you want to make that whereas read?
whereas the state has a multitude of high-quality traditional public schools, optional, oh, excuse me, it should say optional public schools. Public charter schools and non-public schools, as well as families who educate their children in the home. And so, Mr. Chair, if I could amend my amendment or withdraw my amendment and introduce
no,
it properly.
No, just go ahead, because nobody's objected yet, so we're just trying to understand it.
Okay.
So go ahead and restate it the way you want it to read.
Whereas the state has a multitude of high-quality traditional public schools, optional public schools, public charter schools, and non-public schools, as well as families who educate their children in the home.
I'll object just for, you know, so we're sure we have a clear understanding of what we're doing here. And what I would like to do is go back to the sponsor to get the sponsor's comments. Probably that'd be a good place to start. So
that's fine with me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gaddis.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Remembering that the resolution really recognizes parents and parents being able to choose. So again, whether it's optional, lottery, charter, so on, it really goes back to parents' right to choose. And ultimately, you can put as many schools as you want, but I think that the gist of the resolution is to recognize that parents have that right to choose. So as the bill sponsor, or resolution sponsor, I should say, we certainly have no problem the more you want to add on. But at the end of the day, it really is about parent choice.
Any comments from the committee? Representative Seaton, and then I have a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just reading the amendment in context, if we're going to do this, consider it, I think it should be optional public schools. I mean, all of the rest are listing public schools, charter schools, non-public schools. So schools is included in each one of those phrases. And so I think that just putting optional public, it would need to be modified to optional public schools to be consistent across. Of course, that would be reframed by legal probably anyway in somewhat that manner just for consistency, but I think that if we're going to consider this amendment, at least we should have the format consistent across those categories.
Well, I'm going to maintain my objection. The reason is that I just cannot see the point. If we were to make a conceptual amendment, go back to legal services, they would say, well, ask us again or tell me again here what the point is. Public school programs, by definition, are optional to all parents. To me, it gets confusing. Representative Drummond?
If I could, Mr. Chair, thank you. As a former three-term representative of the Anchorage Public Schools as an Anchorage School Board member, the optional programs are optional indeed. They are accessible by lottery to any parents. They've been in place for decades in the Anchorage School District, and I would say they were the first options or schools of choice in the state. And as there are dozens of them within the Anchorage School District, I would find this entire document objectionable if our optional programs were not recognized.
Representative Drummond, just a question on this so help me understand. Does that imply that some of the school programs are not optional?
No. But you can't, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
The optional programs are not neighborhood schools. You cannot simply walk in the door. They are accessible through the lottery program, just like the charter schools. Just like the charter schools that were also instituted in the Anchorage School District in the 90s.
Sponsor, have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Representative Lynn Gaddis. I think that in many of our districts, we name some of these schools different language. I've heard the term lottery school. If you look in our state statutes, I don't think that we have such a thing as neighborhood schools, but I think we all know what it means. And I'm not sure if we have optional schools. And again, at the end of the day, it's really about parents being able to choose. And so, if that is comfortable, or Representative Drummond, who they have named schools optional, it's kind of how they've worked within their school board, I certainly have no problem. Again, parents being able to choose what school their kids go to.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I guess, you know, I can see both aspects of this. One is we're saying traditional public schools. We have alternative public schools, alternative high schools. We have vocational technical schools in a number of places around the state. So I think all of those might be not thought of as being a traditional public school, but they would be some kind of a alternative or optional school. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think that this adding this would actually probably give us a greater breadth of inclusion of schools instead of looking just at traditional public schools and the thought pattern there and the charter school, which is a separate from the optional and alternative schools and vocational technical schools that are offered by many districts. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't, with hearing from the sponsor that she does not object to a classification being broader than just traditional schools, you know, I actually think it would be something that would be helpful to the resolution as we go forward, so that there wouldn't be confusion on the floor or other places where people say, well, does this include all of the choices? And including a expanded category of public school, I think might help the resolution along either in this body or the other. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to amend the amendment by adding the word schools after optional public so that it's consistent across the format of the resolution.
Representative Seaton, I don't understand at all. The state, I'm going to read it the way I understand what's up before us right now is, whereas the state has a multitude of high-quality traditional, and then the amendment adds the word optional, public schools, comma, public charter schools, non-public schools, as well as families who educate their children at home. So where do you want to put the word schools?
Mr. Chairman, I thought that optional public was coming after the comma as another classification of schools. So if
and I'm pretty sure I included the word schools the first time around.
So Mr. Chairman, however the format of the of if it is written as traditional public and then adding a new comma and putting optional public schools, or if it comes after the comma as optional public, then it needs the word school. So I'm a little unclear as to where the amendment is directly inserting.
And the only problem we have right now is making sure it's on the record so Nancy gets it exactly right, because we're not going to pass a conceptual amendment on this if we're going to either do it or not. And so, Representative Drummond, again, if you would restate your amendment, read the sentence as it should read the way you want to amend it, and then we will reconfirm that the sponsor is okay with that, and if that's fine, I will withdraw my objection. We'll be on our way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do that. Whereas the state has a multitude of high-quality traditional public schools, comma, optional public schools, comma, public charter schools, comma, and non-public schools, comma, as well as families who educate their children in the home.
The sponsor is nodding her head. Okay.
Yes, Representative Keller. Okay. Chair, I'm sorry.
So, amendment number one, which has been just stated.
Mr. Chairman, I had.
Representative Seaton?
I think I had made an amendment to amendment number one or offered one, and I'd withdraw that if it's on the record.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, keeping it clear on what we're doing, we try to be informal and get mixed up. But I think it's pretty clear, but I'll just state it one more time. Amendment one that was before the committee changes line 9 of page 1 and following to read, whereas the state has a multitude of high-quality traditional public schools, comma, optional schools, comma, public charter schools, comma, and non-public schools, comma, as well as families who educate their children in-home, semicolon, and therefore. Did I get it right, Representative Drummond?
Mr. Chair, I think you left out the word public between optional and schools.
Okay.
Although we may have too many repetitions of the word public, optional public schools is the phrase that I inserted as the amendment.
And that is the amendment, so we'll go back and read it one more time for the record, and we'll get this on. So, and it is still a conceptual amendment, I'm told, because our alleged legal claims the right to mess with our work. But we have the option of calling it back if it doesn't come back precisely. Whereas the state has a multitude of high quality traditional public schools, comma, optional public schools, comma, public charter schools, comma, and non-public schools, comma, as well as families, and then so on. So I think we got it, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment Number 1? Amendment Number 1 passes. Now we have before us HCR 2 version W as amended. What is the will of the committee, or are there further comments? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move CS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 229LS 0402/W as amended from committee with individual recommendations.
Attached zero fiscal note, did I hear you say?
As amended.
He said.
Amended. Seeing no objection, HCR 2 passes, and we'll take a brief at ease. Now in front of us is HB 30, which is my bill. In the last education meeting, it was put on the table very quickly so we could bring it up again today. We have four online to testify on the bill, but just as a brief reintroduction of the bill, it's a what it is a requirement that school districts include segment of curriculum that can be embedded in other courses that are related, but it's a history requirement. And what it is that the curriculum segment has to teach the values that the Founding Fathers had in mind when the Declaration of Independence was written, the Articles of Confederation, and the early documents, all the early founding documents that happened in approximately a 15-year period. I want to qualify that statement that I did not say that they had to teach and advocate for the values that were there. It's a requirement that they look at and understand, our students understand, the values that were there when our country was founded. And it would be inappropriate to go beyond that. And I would say that it's a very, very important thing. It helps, it's a part of every, to me, it's every part of every child's education. Very obvious that that ought to be part of it, understanding the values that caused our country to happen. In my opinion, personally, I believe that American constitutionalism provided probably, this is in the findings a little bit by the way of the bill, but it actually provided a freedom, a level of freedom for mankind, probably America's biggest gift to the world and all people, because of our understanding of the importance of rights and responsibilities and just how it all works in our government system. So the point I'm making is that I think it's very important, and I also don't want to imply that our schools and school districts are not doing this. I guess I actually believe they're not doing an adequate job, or I wouldn't bring the bill. However, I'm quick to acknowledge there are super schools out there addressing this. In last year, we had a hearing on this, and we had a class call in from Houston. They were they would have beat me on a test for sure. You know, they were very, very knowledgeable and understanding. And the implication is that this ought to be something that we monitor and make sure gets taught in all of our schools and taught so that there's an understanding of how our government works. I think the nobody would really argue that, that we have somehow lost some of the knowledge of this. You're on the street and there's a lot of people that don't know and don't care, who's in office or whatever, in whatever category. I think we all see that, at least I do, and that's the heart and the intent behind the bill. The actual bill is in Section 3, and with the date in Section 4, and what it does, I'm going to read it just for clarification, and I'm going to go slow and add a few comments because it's only a paragraph. The chief school administrator of a school district shall develop and submit to the governing body of that school district, i.e. the school board, for approval, a syllabus for a curriculum segment in the history of American constitutionalism to be taught to all students in the district. An approved syllabus must ensure a student's understanding of the history of American constitutionalism as portrayed in the Declaration of Independence, the first state constitutions, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution of the United States, the Federalist Papers, the Bill of Rights, and other historical documents produced in the founding of our constitutional republic model of a government. And then in Segment B, it says a district may not issue a secondary school diploma to a student who does not successfully complete the course in which the curriculum segment described in A of the section is contained. A school district may not grant a waiver of this requirement. Okay, so the points that I wanted you to catch for sure is that this curriculum segment can be inserted in courses that already exist. And what I, the sponsor of the bill intend is that the district has the option of including it in a history course, in a civics course, or whatever. But it addresses this segment on American constitutionalism. And the other thing is that I want to point out is that there's no testing required from the state level. We're not telling the districts, this is the test, you have to do this. This is not the case at all. We're saying to the districts, you have to put this curriculum in place and then satisfy yourself that the students have had the curriculum and have successfully completed the curriculum to the district standards, not to the state standards. So it is not an imposition of a testing program on the districts. It is a mandate in the sense that it says you will do this. You'll make sure every one of your students get this segment and pass it to your satisfaction. That's the just a just a general statement. But I just help comments, questions that may come up here as we pursue this. So, I think that pretty much covers my presentation. I'm just looking here quickly to see if there's something I neglected. I would say there may be a question that comes up. It was actually brought called to my attention by the commissioner, and it has been part of previous bills. The fact that we may not grant a waiver of this requirement is there, but it also is in the context of the district deciding the standards, as far as whether or not a student has successfully completed the curriculum or not. So anyway, I see that it leaves the authority with the district. So with that, I'm going to stop and ask if there's any questions on the bill from the committee before we go to public testimony. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have a question on page 2, line 16. Do we have any other requirements in state statute or anywhere parallel where we require the chief administrator to develop a curriculum? That seems to be not our normal method of developing curricula in our schools, and I'm just wondering if the chief administrator developing a curriculum and developing a syllabus is a entirely different model of local schools being able to have local control over their curriculum to teach to standards.
Reverend Seaton, I'll ask my staff to come up and comment if he likes, but we gave this to the drafter, and this is what they came back with. And but the intent of the sponsor is that it be approved curriculum segment like any other curriculum segment that is approved. We have given that responsibility to the districts. Some districts have committees and whatever that evaluate the curriculum, and I anticipate our intent certainly is that we not change and put a new model in for curriculum development. It's just making sure that we state that the superintendent, to use the right term, is responsible for getting this done. Not that there's no restriction at all intended on that the superintendent couldn't delegate this to the appropriate entity within the committee. Did you have something to add to that?
I really, to the chair, Representative Coward, this is Jim Pound, staff, and to the chair, Representative Seaton. Essentially, I mean, I think it's one of those things that it's a delegation type job. I mean, normally most school districts operate from their superintendent or school administrator, and that's where they get their curriculum from in the first place. I mean, to say one individual's doing it is certainly, and it'd be like one of us saying that one person writes a piece of legislation. It really doesn't happen. It's a delegated authority.
President Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know, I'm just trying to get the structure of the bill parallel to what we do. And what we have is local school boards in control of curriculum and things. And here we are elevating that to a specific charge to the chief school administrator to develop it and get it approved by the school board. So since we're putting this in statute, I would just like to have the sponsor consider whether this is actually, I mean, it doesn't become loosey-goosey and, well, you may want to do this, or you may want to send it to a committee, or you may want to do it, when we put it in statute that the chief administrator is going to do it and it's going to be approved by the school board instead of a requirement for the school board, the local school district as the school board, to develop the curriculum for the school. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm just bringing that up as it was something that didn't seem to be parallel with our current mechanisms, but I'm not sure. I just bring it up for discussion. Thank you.
Representative Seaton, just in response to that, I would say that it is not our intent to develop a new process for this bill, and that it says that while it says the chief school administrator shall develop and submit, but it says and submit to the governing body of the school district, the school board, i.e., for approval. Okay, so the pattern is there, and as far as your question about why we are putting the responsibility on the superintendent, I think it's appropriate, you know, and I like it, but you know, if you have a suggested amendment on that as we move, we'll certainly take it into consideration. Any other comments or questions on the bill? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little confused in that the memo of the sponsor refers to in Section 3 that local school districts will establish a one-semester course and final exam that represents one-half credit during the senior year of high school, et cetera, et cetera. But in looking at the language of the bill on page 2, section starting on line 15, it refers throughout to a curriculum segment and the course in which a curriculum segment is contained on line 26. So I'm not seeing that the memo is representing exactly what the bill says, but if the bill language is as it is, then I believe I understand that the sponsor's intent is to simply add this to the existing history curriculum?
Or
that our school district is already right. is already presenting, and not adding a, it is not adding a one semester course.
Through the chair, I'm the chair, right?
Representative Keller, through the chair, Representative Grumman. That is an error on my part. I will fully admit that I put in the section all I wrote senior year. I don't know why. But the senior year requirement you have in the section, the line, I have deleted it from the new sectional. You don't have that yet. I apologize. I mean, senior year has been deleted out of the sectional analysis. That was an error on my part.
Thank you. I want to add, this is Representative Keller, that my staff jumped right in there, and I appreciate him taking the responsibility. I just want to explain further that this bill is a perfect bill. And the reason it's perfect is it has been vetted before. And the paperwork has just not kept up with the vetting.
So. Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, as long as the memo doesn't become part of the record, in fact, I had not realized that it was, that it said in the senior year, we'll just call this a senior moment. I'm now understanding that it's your, the sponsor is recommending a curriculum segment that deals with these parts of our history of our country as part of the curriculum, and I'm fine with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drummond, and I make a commitment to get our a statement there updated to match what's in the bill.
Something did occur to me, however, yes. Mr. Chair, if I could, in line 17, after the chief school administrator develops and submits to the governing body of a school district for approval, what if the governing body chooses not to approve it? Having been a member of a governing body like that, they don't always approve what the superintendent brings forward. I'm just being a devil's advocate here, Mr. Chair. That was simply a comment.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and the bill just doesn't get to that level of answering that. And we, I assume that the local school district, where there's something like this, could work it out. I don't think we've introduced the confusion unless you see it. If somebody says, "Okay, we do not approve," then they're going to have trouble when it gets to the Part B of the bill, which is that they can't issue a diploma unless they can satisfy themselves that this requirement has happened. So I would assume that that would be a motivation, a proper motivation for the school district to go whatever a process would be required to get that approval. But that's just the way I perceive it. Representative Reinhold, you're online. I didn't give you an opportunity yet, but if you have something, just speak up to add to the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if you could hear me or not. So
loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, fantastic. Yes, I did actually have a couple questions on a resolution, but I couldn't get through. But we will speak at a later date in regards to this. But yes, I'm listening loud and clear, so thank you very much.
Okay. Reverend Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking on page 2, line 19, where we have an approved syllabus must ensure a student's understanding of the history of American constitutionalism. And then on line 27, a school district may not grant a waiver to this requirement. I'm trying to balance the two of those if there's not some kind of assessment required. So I guess your previous statement that they can do whatever they, each school district can, doesn't need to grant a waiver because there's no requirement for a test, but somehow the syllabus, and I presume that means the going through of the syllabus, ensures that the students understand the history, and this is a high-stakes graduation requirement, and if it cannot be waived, I'm just trying to figure out, so if a school district says, We put in a one-week segment, and all students attended the class, and therefore that satisfies the criteria, and therefore we don't need them to demonstrate any understanding. They just had, the syllabus had to have an understanding, and since the students were in class, whatever that segment is, I don't think it says the length of segment, so it could be a very short segment. And so does this mean the school district can then say, yes, Johnny attended the class, that was discussed in the class, so Johnny understands or is ensured that American constitutionalism is there and Johnny can graduate from high school? I'm trying to find the parameters of those things, which seem to be somewhat in conflict in my mind.
Mm. Well, maybe I can remove, we're going to see some of the conflict, at least from my perspective. The syllabus is a outline, of the course, and when it says ensure a student's understanding of the history, it's written from a perspective, I see every dad as a teacher, and if I'm putting together a curriculum and a syllabus for a segment, what I would do if I wanted to ensure that the students got it is that I would, in fact, give some kind of a test, oral or written, to the student to know where they're at to begin with, and then, teach what I want, use different lesson plans and whatever to get the end of that I anticipate, and then test the child, to the teacher standards, whether or not the teacher was successful or not. Okay, to me, that is what was talked about there on line 17, and the standard for the district is in line 26, and that is successful completion of the course without going into great detail. So for my, the way I see this, the wording is very good and clear, and maybe if you have a suggestion how to clarify it further, we can provide an amendment to that end.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, from the seat.
So then the syllabus is required to ensure that the student has access to material in that portion of the course, but the not granting a waiver just means that the student had to have successfully complete the course or had to attend the course, not have to demonstrate any particular knowledge related to the syllabus.
Representative Seaton, I can't imagine a caring teacher wanting to pencil whip this, but if you're suggesting that that's a possibility, I'm sure it is. Any state law, you can fill out the forms and report and slide through. But I'm operating on the presumption that that teachers, students, and parents, really want this to be taught in good faith in our schools. And I, so I'm not that concerned about the fact that a district might go in and just check a box that the student attended every day. And we're happy with that, although, of course, that's possible.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman,
following
up on that, one of the things that I was concerned about is we have a number of special education students that are at different levels, and since there's this explicit provision that you cannot grant a waiver to this section, I want to make sure whether it's the intention of the sponsor that there is a certain level of understanding of the material that has to be demonstrated by those special education students or non-special education students or, English language learners or other speakers as to what this is. But I'm understanding that the sponsor's intent is that however they demonstrate completion of a course is acceptable within the parameters of this bill.
That's the way I understand it.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Reibold, you had a question?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, what we're going to do is go to public testimony, and then we'll see where we're at. I think I'm going to start with a friend of mine, Stuart Thompson, is in Juneau today. It's a very, very windy and cold day. What's like at home? Stuart, if you're there, identify yourself for the record and tell me who you represent, and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greetings to the Chairman and all members of the House Education Committee. I speak for myself, a District 8 citizen, for passage of HB 30, Constitutional History Curriculum. I pray for committee compassion. Despite hours of struggle, my prepared testimony still lasts 3.5 minutes. Hearing Chairman, may I still testify?
Stuart, yes, you have 3.45 if you like. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Start of my testimony. It's a well-known concept that knowledge enables competent change and problem solving. It follows that chronic state natural problems or propaganda-driven solutions that rebound with grosser problems or no verifiable satisfactory results from using public money all expose poor or no education. I followed the debate on Representative Wes Keller's bill for some years. Educational special interests claim that necessary civic education is provided in segments within a couple semesters of social studies. Further, they say an educational mandate would generate extra labor Alaska can ill afford. These rationalizations are continuing inadequate citizen education make me want to puke. Here's a simple elaboration. Contrary to the propagandized portrayal of America having government of, for, and by the people, what actually gets conducted now is benevolent elected aristocracy, government by an elite. This is well revealed by the chronic vulnerability of American politicians to lobbyists and campaign donation blackmail, typical of highly centralized forms of government. Naturally, politicians think it's best to make the hard decisions as elected agents or officials on behalf of everyone. This political definition of represent is supported by being in modern college-level dictionaries. But there lies the problem. This definition of represent isn't the one that was used by U.S. founding fathers, nor does it align with the Alaska Constitution's Article 1, Sections 1 and 2. The proof is simple. There were no English dictionaries available to people in America's formative years. Educated people then were also conversant with Latin and Greek. Therefore, their understanding of English words for use in important writings arose from the Latin or Greek derivations of those words. So what is the true meaning of represent on that basis? It is to show or put forth again. If you represent people that way, politicians are supposed to relay the fruits of their constituents' minds. That means elected officials are duty-bound to actually lead their constituents so they supply an organized body of comprehensive viewpoints for legislative use. That also means a political leader has to handle constituent laziness or ignorance or immaturity so he can represent something. Let me note here that elected officialdom is our country's only major profession that doesn't compel continuing education. The pride in this is so arrogant that about 10 years ago, I was refused even a hearing before the Rules Committee about making legislative continuing education about government a legislative rule. This is despite existing legislative rules that legitimize doing so. Not knowing true representative government methodology well, easily a consequence of not understanding the basic word underlying all of our political heritage, makes politicians and citizens alike reach for the methodologies of other forms of government. For example, how most elected officials now treat constituent concerns and how constituents now approach elected officials is quite similar to the political relationship of nobles and peasants in the Middle Ages. Please research the word "assizes," the town hall meeting public hearing of that era. Pass HB 30. Let's give our youth a start at learning the true philosophy and methods of self-government. which channels organized liberty with true justice in the pursuit of happiness. Thank you for your attention. I'll fax in my testimony. But by the way, Mr. Chairman, after all other citizens have their say, will you give me special permission to speak for another minute? I would like to simply state what is arguably the most fundamental principle of government known to history that is apparently not taught. This submission is arguably hurting Alaskans and their teachers.
Stuart, thank you for your carefully prepared testimony, and I do want you please to fax that to us so we have it, so we can give it to the recorder and get it word for word. And it's a profound and great statement. And yes, as it turns out, I don't know what the committee will choose to do, if we'll act on the bill or not. But it looks to me at this point like we have plenty of time, and I will give you the minute requested after we go through here. So thanks again, Stuart.
Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to hearing from other citizens now.
Okay. We'll go to Bob Bird in Kenai.
Hello, Representative Keller. Thank you for this time. I'm sure I'll go over 3 minutes, but I'll try and keep it as quickly as possible. My compliments to Mr. Thompson in the Mat-Su Valley. I hope we get a chance to meet. So that the committee knows my background, I've been teaching for 41 years in the public schools. I have a master's degree in history. I'm semi-retired. I still teach constitutional law to 12th graders at Nikiski High School. I also do homeschool tutoring in my semi-retirement. So that you know where I'm coming from, I was twice a candidate for the U.S. Senate and endorsed by Ron Paul. So that is the conceptual approach I take to the Constitution. In my class, we have exercised the great books method of teaching government. And government is a requirement here at the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, but as you are in your bill, probably concerned that not all school districts require this. But we read the entire Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution of the United States word for word. I've been doing this since 1986. I wish I could take back the students who were taught the course by me before that time and tell them, I made some mistakes. Because only when you actually parse through the documents and the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers can you really understand what's going wrong. And Mr. Keller, you know that I sometimes had connections with legislators about constitutional questions and many other issues. And I would tell you that the idea that every legislator ought to have constitutional refresher courses occurred to me on the way driving into the LIO office, and I think that's what Mr. Thompson was alluding to in his testimony. I've sent you an attachment via email. They are typical responses of my students after they receive this course, after a full semester it takes me, and I can't really cover everything I'd like to. I hope you put those somehow into the record, or that your committee has a chance to have them read. It will show you that 12th graders are perfectly capable of understanding that we are in a terrible constitutional mess. I want to praise your bill, but caution is needed. Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers are absolutely essential to properly teach the Constitution, but it is largely incomprehensible to most adults, let alone students. I have to sort of translate the Declaration of Independence to them because there's phrases from the 18th century they don't understand, as well as the Federalist papers. I want to tell you, the problem with this bill is that if you allow boilerplate constitutional textbooks to be allowed as fulfilling the requirement, here's an example that I just saw yesterday. A nice, glitzy, glossy, try this with your students type of thing came in a package. It showed an argument. Should there or should there not be a balanced budget amendment? The Liberal Democrats said, no, there shouldn't be a balanced budget amendment. The conservative, and they gave their arguments. The conservative Republicans said there should. And so then it asks students to analyze the arguments and make up their own mind. But what they've missed is that there already is a balanced budget amendment. It's called the 10th Amendment. And so I tell my students there's no need for a balanced budget amendment. We've already got one. If we made another one, how are we going to guarantee that that's going to be obeyed when there already is one? So that is a typical example of how textbooks generally don't get it anyway. I can remember that I had to disabuse the students when, in an early chapter, one of the textbooks once said, the Constitution is a living document. So it took a side that is nonsense. If the Constitution is a living document, it is essentially dead. And the Constitution does tell you, it takes sides, it does demand, it does require a strict construction, which in most textbooks, if that's even discussed, is seen as simply another opinion worthy of looking into. Truly, the only textbook that should be required, if you're going to hand this curriculum off to a typical social studies student, is Kevin Gutzman's The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. And I know you're not going to do that because from listening to your testimony there, it's probably not something you want to do, and that is to force-feed people textbooks. But that is the only way to really properly understand the Constitution as a way for some teacher to have some sort of guideline. So I'm going to simply say I wish you well with this bill, but if it doesn't take the care to show that the Federalist Papers and even the Anti-Federalist Papers should be part of the curriculum, it'll probably just become nothing but fluff stuff when it gets down to each individual school district.
Thank you, Bob. I'm going to take the liberty to ask you a question, but first, I want to say that I think you captured very well my intent, and I heard your caution. And a very good part of the bill is the use of the word "ism," American constitutionalism, and where that comes from. Just for the record, I picked up a textbook that really impressed me. The title of it is American Constitutionalism: A Shot That Was Heard Around the World. And what that implies is that the values that were surrounding the our American Constitution and Declaration and that need to be looked at and just refreshed in our minds. And I want to quickly state that I do not anticipate that this bill will force but law just doesn't do that. It doesn't accomplish the ends in and of itself. Well, there were good results, if there are good results, if this bill passes, will come from good faith efforts of people like yourself and teachers, expanding on the values. The question I have, you know the Declaration of Independence very well. You read through it with student groups over and over again. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but off the cuff, what is the most impressive ism value that you see revealed in a review of the Declaration of Independence? Can you come up with a sentence or two? Or I don't mean to put you...
Yes, I will. I show them that God is recognized in our founding document. And this nonsense that we have a separation of church and state, which is meant to mean we have a separation of state and God, is nonsense. God is mentioned four times, as well as natural law. He's recognized as lawgiver, creator, provider, and judge. And however the Supreme Court wants to ram their opinions down our throats, they can't escape that aspect of the Declaration of Independence. The other thing is I show them that bureaucracy is specifically cited in the Declaration as is jury nullification. And it's implied, jury nullification is implied, but when it says he has sent upon a swarm of officers and to eat our substance and harass our people. This is exactly what the federal government has become. It was an embryonic problem, but they had tremendous prescience in 1776 that they could see at once. An overweening central power gains a beachhead. It has nothing to do but grow. And they created firewalls, which have been destroyed, and people are starting to wake up to it now. So my characterization of the Declaration of Independence is that natural law is cited in the first breath. God is asked to judge the righteousness of the American cause, and they were not afraid to call upon his name. And the idea that we have to expunge any mention of God in public venues is nonsense.
Thank you, Bob. And just for the record, I had no idea how you're going to respond. So, but thank you. Okay, Chris Hutchinson.
Good morning, Chairman Keller. I live here on the Kenai Peninsula.
And represent first, then go please ahead.
My name's Christine Hutchinson. I don't represent any particular group, even though I'm long-term actively involved with a group, and I'm a private citizen, and I have a degree in education, and I've taught social studies a long time ago, and with the permission of Mr. Thompson and Mr. Bird, I would like to incorporate their testimony in mine, if that would be okay, because everything they said much more eloquently than myself is where I stand. All of it, right down to Mr. Bird's last words. So I'm just here as I was last year when this was here, and I will be again next year if this survives the Senate committee, because this is extremely important. Now, I do want to apologize to the committee because I have been remiss in my lifetime of not paying closer attention to this. My daughter said to me, "Well, Mom, I don't understand what happened to you. You weren't like this when I was in high school." So there is my error. But I realize now the grievous lack our young people have of this process, all the way from right here at where we sit, all the way to Washington. And I have come to understand that you people there in Juneau love to hear from us and love to listen to what we have to say if we only knew the process and the procedures and how these things worked, so we could do that. But I very much favor what these gentlemen have said. The whole thing, the way it is written, I would hopefully this entire committee would pass it as it is. And I want to say that as I go through my day, I ask young people, particularly young people, because it's so important to get them involved, I ask them, "Are you registered to vote?" And more times than you can believe, I've had them say, "I graduated from Kenai Nikiski High School, and Bob Bird was my teacher, and yes, I am registered to vote." Now, the next student was not registered, and they did not graduate from Nikiski High School. Now, I'm not saying there's any disparity in the education, but I cannot tell you how important this is, not where Bob is teaching it or not where Mr. Thompson is, but right down on the street. If we want people to understand what's going on or what's not going on or the whatever that is going on, we need to get people involved. And they don't, even if only all they do is vote. But they need to understand how the Constitution works and why what's happening is so critical to the way of life it was when I grew up and when my parents grew up, that we're losing that. And it's all found in the Constitution. So I'm just really grateful for the words of these previous two men, and I just pray that this will flow smoothly through this committee. I know it faces serious roadblock when it gets to the Senate, and I'm going to be back. And I'm going to be letting them know, because this is not an option. I mean, this is not a choice. This has to be done. And I very much appreciate you, Mr. Keller, for bringing it back again. And if it has to come back again next year, this is a process. This is not something we're going to get fixed with this one bill, I'm sure. And so I just, it's a process, and we need to be faithful to this, and I'm so glad people like yourself are that faithful. Thank you very much, each and every one of you, for your consideration and positive vote on this.
Thank you, Christine. I don't see any questions at this time. Barbara Haney, North Pole.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Barbara, we hear you loud and clear. There was a little lag, but if you would identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent and give us your testimony.
Fine, thank you. My name is Barbara Haney. I represent myself. For quite a few years at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I taught a class called Political Economy. In fact, there's two or three people who work with the legislature who actually took that class from me. I believe the class is still offered, although I am no longer at the university. But I cannot stress the importance of this legislation. I'm a little amused, I must say, about the idea of the chief school administrator actually developing the curriculum, although I understand the logic of wording it that way. But what I would like to request the committee to consider, and there may be a reason for this, is that the Mayflower Compact be added to the list of documents. It is the first document that was actually written in the, if you look at the series of great freedom documents, and it was the first one written on North American soil. And I think it would be a good document to include. It's very short, it's very sweet, and I think it, the history behind the document of people coming out of a storm and not being anywhere near where they thought they were in establishing a government, establishing rules of conduct, I think it should impress upon students that just because there's no government or no overreaching structure around, it's not an excuse to go out and act like a an animal or, you know, to act in an absurd way. Either there's certain rules of conduct and standards of conduct that people have historically had even when there was no government present. So anyway, I would ask you to do that, but other than that, I this is a very timely amendment. I pardon me, wants to say, yeah, what they said, but you know, we could add the Mayflower Compact. That would just make it that much better. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I see no other questions. Is there? We'll go back to Stuart, but is there other people online? No. Is there anybody in the room that wants to testify on the bill? And then, Stuart, you requested one more minute. Please go ahead. Identify yourself again for the record so it's clear.
Sure. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm speaking for myself, a District 8 citizen. Here's my minute here. Alaska Constitution Article 7's prohibition against sectarian control of education should compel your interest in the fact that the following principle is not directly taught in Alaskan schools, evidenced by citizen and government conduct. All types of government fall somewhere on a spectrum as follows. One, government of the people, examples, dictatorships, monarchies, and theocracies, shading to elite oligarchies and aristocracies. Two, government of and for the people, examples, benevolent rulerships like nobility council or parliamentary-backed monarchies, shading to elected aristocracies that honor rule of law. And three, government of, for, and by the people, examples, real constitutional republics and parliamentary democracies shading to ethics-driven democracies and anarchies. You can judge the type of government being used by the types of devices that it utilizes to rule. The attitude towards citizen potential, i.e. Obama's people are too small-minded to govern themselves versus Thomas Jefferson's convictions, and how much a government harvests the fruits of people's minds to govern. Thanks again for your attention. I shall leave you with something to think about for the rest of your legislative careers. Consider the volume of true citizen participation in government of, for, and by the people is probably the most reliable test for public education effectiveness it could ever be. Good luck on your deliberations.
Thank you, Stuart. That was thought-provoking, and we appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
I don't think we have anybody else waiting to testify, so we'll close public testimony. And I'm going to take a little bit easier. We're back on the record, and I just want to say for the record that Representative Colbert has joined us at 9:13. Representative Colbert, do you have comments on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the intent of the legislation, would like to work with you on how this would be implemented in the schools to not drop another required credit. And so perhaps we can work on some language where it can be incorporated in the U.S. history credit without adding another graduation requirement that would result in a district having to either add more staff or drop something else. And so that's my hope and thought, that perhaps we can work within parameters of, we can talk about that further as far as mechanics of that, but that's just my hope that we could incorporate this within the U.S. history credit that we require currently, that the subject matter of importance of our national heritage or constitution would be part of that curriculum. And if it required new curriculum as far as books, that we would have a phase in where we are not incurring fiscal notes for school districts to change curriculum. It's just some of the concerns that I think I would bring from a practical standpoint of how we could assist in rolling this out where it could be a collaborative effort with existing graduation requirements.
Yeah. Representative Colbert, do you have a specific amendment to offer to the committee? And I want to point out that the lot of the things you just raised were discussed in committee and have been vetted in a review of the minutes. Will maybe satisfy you with some of the questions.
Okay, if you'd allow me that.
Wait a minute. I didn't allow anything. Are you asking that we hold a vote?
Yes, I would, if we could extend the courtesy before, just to get a feel for the issues that I raised. And I apologize for not being able to be here. Something else came up, but it is of importance. I do not want to hold your bill back.
That's what you're asking for.
Well, I would like to get clarity on that.
Okay.
With review of the minutes, or perhaps you can enlighten me without taking the committee's time up to rehash something.
Okay.
But you're saying that ground's been plowed and we've got alignment on that?
Okay, so what the chair will do is set the bill aside, and I would ask that Representative Carver go back and review the minutes for today. And we'll hopefully be able to bring it back, hopefully for quick action next Monday. But if Representative Carver has a suggestion that has not been answered today, or raising a question that has not been addressed, we'll bring that back up. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think we've had committee discussion on the bill. At this point, I'm uncomfortable with the bill, as you know from previous talks, and I was actually uncomfortable with some of the testimony that we got today that said that previous documents or ideas in previous documents should override the Constitution. The Constitution was an agreement that was reached among many parties and is a structured document, and when we reach back to the Declaration of Independence and say that those should be controlling, when they're not contained in those ideas should be controlling when they're not contained in the Constitution, seems to me to be rejecting the idea of a Constitution entirely. And so I'm very uncomfortable with that. I didn't want to get into a debate with with someone testifying, but I think that we need to look at what we're asking. We're not talking about civics or studying the Constitution. and what it says. We're talking about the values that were held by the people that existed at the time the Constitution was created. And, of course, the Constitution was a compromise. The Constitution, you know, allowed slavery. The Constitution did not allow the women the right to vote. State constitutions at the time, which are included in this bill, did not allow married women to own property in their name. They counted Indians as no persons in a census. They were zero. They counted anyone else other than white men and women as three-quarters of a person. I think that when we look at many of the things that are happening around the world today that we strongly object to, we find some of those things in our own history at the formation and values that were held by those people of not allowing women the right to vote. Not, you know, suffrage came much later. I'm glad that we have reached there, and that's contained in the Constitution through amendments. So, Mr. Chairman, I am somewhat, I'm very concerned that we don't look at the document that was actually crafted and agreed to by the people of the United States, and look to the values of the people that were negotiating that as controlling, because we can pick one value or another, the Federalist or the Anti-Federalist Papers. We can pick many of those things. And so, Mr. Chairman, I am concerned that we take an idea that says the Constitution isn't what's important. It's the values that were expressed by some of the founders, and we're going to accelerate those, not the Constitution provisions itself. So, Mr. Chairman, other than the structure of the bill, which I talked to you about before, I'm concerned about the actual implementation of the bill and saying we're going to teach values of people, and those, including those values that we no longer espouse and that we've actually changed by amendment to the Constitution. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not in favor of moving this bill, you know, possibly. Some of those things can be outlined as to what we are really talking about or how we would do that, and I'd be considerate then. But I wanted to, in committee discussion, let you know that I am uncomfortable with that portion of teaching the values that were not incorporated in the Constitution. And later came in later amendments, because that seems to me that what this is doing. Otherwise, we would be teaching the Constitution. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Response is the sponsor of the bill. what the bill intends, Constitution. What it means is the values that were there when our Constitution was formed will be evaluated. So the items you just went over would be all very allowable and very much a what could be brought up in such a curriculum segment. And there is a huge value in that discussion. And the alternative is that we, I don't think I heard you say this, but the alternative would be that we wouldn't want to look at the values that were there and that are incorporated in our founding documents. For fear that, we would be shutting out some of the values. And I can't go there, but that's okay. That's a matter of debate, and I've already said we're putting the bill aside, and you have set a stage for committee discussion, and I certainly am not trying to run it over the committee. I had hopes that we would pass it today, but it isn't. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we'll put it aside. And tomorrow, on Monday, when we're going to gavel out here in a little bit. Monday, when we get back, we're not going to pick this up first thing. It'll be the Alaska secondary post-secondary education Commission, and they're here to make a presentation, and we'll listen to that. And if their time remains time at the end of the day, we'll go back and revisit this. But, yeah, thanks. Just a quick overview of what's coming. Let's see here. We still can go back. Commissioner Hanley will be here on Monday also with Susan, and if there's more questions, they can come up there. Federal grant, I'm on the wrong day here, and now I'm with you. But he will be back. They blocked out this time. So, anyway, Monday it's Alaska, Commissioner Post-Secondary Education, and update on that. So thanks for that. We're adjourned at 9:27.